honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and this special episode marking 80 years since the sinking of the USS Hornet. This Wednesday, October 26th, is that anniversary, 80 years since Bob Cole lost his eye, or at least the use of it, and very nearly lost his life. When we left off, we heard him describe putting fuses and vanes on bombs in the forward mess hall when a Japanese bomb came down the elevator and detonated, killing 23 of the 35 men in that room. Bob was stunned, hurt, blinded, but soon heard the order to abandon ship, and he had to try to find a way up and off of that crippled carrier.
So we crawled up the ladders to the hangar deck, and then we had to jump into the water. And I happened to find a towel to hold my eye up like this, because it was just laying down by the skin underneath here, and an optic nerve that held it from just going out altogether. And I had two big holes in my back from the shrapnel. So we abandoned ship, and I stayed in the water for about 45 minutes to an hour before I was rescued, because, you know, all the people were abandoning. The destroyer, Mustang, came up and picked me up. Then they took me into the dressing room, and they sewed my eye up with no anesthetic, so I was in such a shock. From there, they took me to the French island called Noumea. Also, we had a hospital ship, Solace, S-O-L-A-C-E, and I was put aboard there, and that's when they were determined what to do with my eye. They weren't worried about my back, and my back hurt more than the eye. But 3 days on board the ship, hospital ship, there was a cargo ship going back to San Diego, so we drew straws who was going to go back. I happened to draw a good straw. There were some married couples there, married people wanted to go. I'll give you $5,000 for that. I said, well, I'll never see you again, buddy. I may be dumb, but I'm not stupid. So I went back to, but took us about, I think it was 2 weeks or so before we got to San Diego. And then we put in the San Diego Naval Hospital. And I stayed there for almost 8 months. My parents were given a letter saying I was a MIA, missing in action. Because nobody knew where we were, everything's in uproar.
Man, there's so many questions about this. I didn't want to interrupt you because it's so captivating, the story that you told. But I'm going to backtrack with you and kind of take you through some of those steps along the way. So at the time that you guys got hit, you were on that second deck putting fuses on bombs?
Yeah, putting a fuse and bomb and vanes on the bomb. And then we'd ship them up in the elevator to the hangar deck or flight deck, probably the hangar deck first, because they couldn't put the planes on the hangar deck up to the flight deck until the planes on the flight deck took off. And then
all of a sudden this explosion happens.
Bomb came right down the elevator, which we used to go up and down and ship the bombs, and they exploded. And it happened to be in the forward mess hall. The tables are all aluminum or something like that, and they just scattered, and then shrapnel hit all of us.
So all of the explosive material and shrapnel within the bomb was added to by all this metal material inside the room. I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes and understand what that felt like. Because, I mean, this is sudden and intense, I imagine. What did it feel like?
You know, I was in shock. Looking around and also seeing how, we told to abandon ship, find out where the ladder was, because, I'm not normal. And then seeing some of my good friends dead, and find out where the other ones who were not dead, so we all could go up, one at a time, the ladder. And it's chaos.
And your left eye is hanging out of the socket, just hanging on by a thread.
By the skin underneath and one optic nerve there.
You're wounded in the back.
When they took the shrapnel out of the holes in my back, whatever the utensils they use, they could see my rib. Yeah.
You had to be in a lot of pain.
Oh, well, when you're in shock, you don't know what I was in pain, very much so. Then I had to jump in the water.
Well, you had to get up to where you can jump in the water first.
And also, I had to find a life jacket.
And you probably can't see very straight with only one eye.
That's right. blood just rolling all over the place. There, your camaraderie is great because people are helping each other. They grabbed me, you know, and led me to where I'm supposed to jump, and then we jumped together so I wouldn't go someplace else.
That's not a jump in a wading pool.
They say it's around between 40 and 60 feet. And thank God I wasn't on the flight deck. So that's higher up.
Yeah. Did you have to hold your eye in while you jumped?
I did because I had a towel. I found a towel when I was there, and some guy might have found it for me. And I lift my eye back up and then hold the towel like that and held it all the time I was there. And they said, make sure when you do get in the water, make sure you float on your back because your back has more protection than your stomach does. Your stomach is just old fat.
And this may sound like a dumb question or a dumb series of questions. Were you scared? Did you think you were going to die?
Very scared, very scared. You know, I've never been through anything like that. I'm a little farm boy. Never even had guns around our house or anything like that, so I don't think about you talking about a life lesson. I probably learned more the 4 years I was in the Navy than I learned 4 years in college about life. I'm not talking about books, no. I'm talking about life. I learned everything. I learned things I never even envisioned I'd ever know, you know, or have to do. I'm not the only one, you know.
The phrase trial by fire takes on new meaning when we hear a story like yours. So you've gotten out of the fire, out of this sinking ship, but now you're in the water. And there are all kinds of things to worry about in the water. How long were you in the water?
Anywhere from about 45 minutes to an hour.
How long did it feel like?
Eternity. But I looked around, I said, I'm not here by myself. That's the best part of it. If I had to be there by myself, I might have just turned over and said, the heck with it.
How many did you have with there? Do you remember any of them?
On our ship, because there's a lot of ships out there picking up people out of the water. I would say it was about 20 in my particular area.
Did you have anything to help you stay afloat?
Yeah, your life jacket, that's all. That's all. And, you know, you paddle, dog paddle or something like that.
And I want to get back to your story and how you recovered and all that, but how often over the years, how often do you think about those shipmates of yours who didn't make it?
At first, I didn't think too much about it because I was thinking about myself. In fact, after I came back and went through college and I was teaching, they thought I had post-trauma, and they sent me to a psychiatrist and all that, even after when I was teaching. And, I feel sorry for those people, but life goes on, you know, and I met other people because after I got out of the hospital, I had another adventure. Because what they wanted to do was give me a medical discharge out of the hospital. And I said, no, I don't want one because I signed up for 4 years because I want a college education. And this is the only way I'm going to get it. So I don't want a discharge. So they put on my papers that I could never be shipped outside the continental limits of the United States. So I was put on recruiting duty. I was sent to St. Louis and recruiting aviation cadets. I never thought about teaching, you know, because I was a social studies major and a PE minor, and I was put in St. Louis. We live in private homes. I go out in Missouri, Kentucky, Indiana, recruiting at the high schools, just like that guy recruited me.
And this is while the war is still going on.
Oh, the war is still going on, yeah. And I recruited aviation cadets. So when the recruiting was closed up, I was sent to St. Olaf College in Northville, Minnesota. Anybody know about Northville? That's where Jesse James robbed the bank. Anyway, in this small town south of Minneapolis, there's two colleges. St. Olaf is for Navy cadets. On the other side of the river was the Carleton College for Army cadets. And so I was sent to St. Olaf, and that's where I taught English and math. I didn't know I wanted to be a teacher, but by recruiting and going to all these high schools and teaching there. And then when that closed up, I was sent to Miami, Florida, Opa-locka Air Station. It's quite a coincidence, talking about Miami, there was a hurricane coming in. So we had to take our papers with us and stay in a hotel until the hurricane was over. Then I stayed at Opa-locka Air Station. And when my 4 years was up, I said, it's time to go.
Well, that's impressive that college education meant that much to you, that they're giving you your discharge. You said, no, I want to serve some more. And I'm curious, when you're out there recruiting guys, the war's still going on. In fact, the war's getting worse and worse if you look at it from a casualty perspective. How often did you talk about what had happened to you?
Well, I gave them the whole story, like what happened to me. And I said that, but remember, my story is only one. And here's a chance for you to do what I meant to do. I want to go to college. Now here's a chance for you to go to get a free college education, learn to be a pilot, because if you do survive the war, most of the pilots go on to be pilots for United, you know, all the airlines.
So would you say you were a pretty good recruiter then?
Oh, I thought so, because we had a lot of McTainal.
So none of them ever said, hey, it almost killed you. Why do I want to go do that?
No, they didn't say that.
As far as the recovery, so, I mean, you get picked up. You know, maybe I didn't spend enough time on that. How great did that feel to get picked up out of that water?
I thought they were never coming. Look, there's, 3,000 people in the water. Count the other ships and all that people. How can they handle so many people? I thought, well, when I saw that ship coming towards us, we all hollered, hey, over here, over here. You know, you've seen that on TV, haven't you? Uh-huh. Hey, over here, I'm over here.
Best thing you ever saw?
Oh, man, better than ice cream.
You talked about being in shock when that bomb hit and you're hit in the back and your eyes hanging out. When did that shock wear off and when did you realize what had happened to you?
I think the shock wore off was when I was on board the hospital ship Solus. They had, more trained doctors. Because when you're on board, like that destroyer, and you're moving and you're the guy operator, you know, he's trying to do the best he can, but you're still under fire and you're moving. And so when I was aboard the Solus, the hospital ship, you know, they're standing still. They're not moving. In fact, they wanted to take my eye out and give me a glass eye. Thank God that cargo ship came along. Because what am I going to say? But they know more medically than I do. And so I figured whatever they say is going to happen. So I was very fortunate that I still have my same eye, but little by little, I can distinguish day and night. And once in a while, I can see a hand, but if you put one or two or three, I would never see that. So
you see fine out of your right eye, but the left eye has never been the same since.
No, and the right eye that's why I go to the Veterans Hospital here every 4 months, and they give me, I put drops in my eye, and DMV wants 20/40, but the best I can get is 20/50. And the DMV say, that's good enough for me. Uh-huh. So far.
Well, I know you covered a lot of miles all those years of refereeing basketball, and that I have to go there because it's too ripe for the picking. What is the biggest criticism about referees every year, that they need glasses or they can't see? Did you ever have some people heckle you about your basketball reffing?
I said, hey, I got both eyes, but I only see out of one. And then a lot of times they razz you, and then I might say, I'm laughing all the way to the bank.
If they only knew what that eye had been through, that it would be heaping coals on top of their heads, I'm sure.
Most of the coaches, you know, we might meet at the bar, and we have good times. And I remember one time when I met at the bar, and I put my glasses on, and this coach's wife says, why the hell didn't you put those glasses on while you're refereeing? I said, I might have seen too much, and it caused the game to go longer.
Yeah, we don't want that whistle blowing too much. So you said, was it 8 months in the hospital?
8 months. There's a comic side of that, too, you know, because I had both eyes covered all the time because they didn't want to have the strain on one eye. But if you wanted liberty whenever you're able, you had to do one or two things. You either polish all the brass in your area or go to the zoo and clean out the zoo pens. I said, well, I'm not going to the zoo. I've been in the zoo all my life. Out in that water, that's the zoo. So I didn't go much liberty. No, either that or I just polished the brass.
8 months is a long time, and your back's healing up, your eye's healing up. What was the hardest thing for you to deal with?
Well, I told you before this, you know, I never had a chance to call my mother to let her know where I am because I knew I was listed as MIA. When I was able to get to the phone, when they allowed me to use the phone, I called my mom and told her, she's in shock because she hadn't heard anything from me.
She thought you were dead.
Yeah. In fact, they had a funeral for me. That was before I called her. And I called her and she's, oh, God. Well, she had a sister living in Glendale. And so she immediately called her sister and her sister came down and visited me once a month. That was something, but you know, it was lonely. You lay there and you can't see because your both eyes are covered. In fact, when I was going to college and my wife and I was all covered and I had a biology class and I had to trace the blood from the start to the finish in your heart. And I couldn't read a book, so she would read it to me. You go from this vein to this ventricle, this ventricle, this artery, this artery. I pass it.
And that's what I'm wondering, because, I mean, I think it's obvious to everyone listening, it's pretty remarkable that you survived when so many did not that day. So in all this time where you're recovering, you got your eyes covered, you can't see anything, you're in a pretty helpless situation. Did you ever think that you would get married someday, that you'd have a daughter, that you'd have grandkids and great-grandkids?
Never even thought about it. All I thought about is getting healthy, get back on my feet, go to college. I really wanted to go to college. Because all my friends at Odo, you know, they came from pretty rich families. When I say rich, I mean they're better off than we were. And they're all going to college. And what am I going to do? There's no jobs in a town of 300 people. You got two gas stations, two grocery stores, a bank, the post office. That's it. I felt lonely, hoping someday to get back to normal.
So I know you can't do this. It doesn't look possible. But if you could go down to the bottom of the ocean and the wreckage of the Hornet, what would you try to get out of there? What went down with that ship that you wish you still had?
I like those pictures I have with Doolittle and the pictures I have with him, the pilots. Any souvenirs that I got when I was in Hawaii, there's not much I had. You know, being a rookie, a petty officer, you don't have many things.
Certainly nothing as powerful or as sobering as the memories he's carried now for 80 years. Memories that make him grateful and all of us grateful he survived. I trust your perspective might be just a little bit different than it was an hour ago. And perhaps you might want to learn a little bit more about the USS Hornet, a ship that participated in World War II for less than a year, but provided the tapestry for so many heroic moments to be etched into history. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today. We dedicate this program to the 140 men who perished with the Hornet on October 26, 1942. Together, reminding us once again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.